Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
That's seriously not too much wind. All I hear is wind.
To the shutdown full cast.
I'm punished for telling you to keep it tasteful because we have company.
No, yeah, a little bit.
All right.
It actually went like, I was like, well, how do you do it game show style? And then in the middle of it, I started to run out of breath, so I got louder. And that's really story of my life. I started to run out of breath, so I got louder. Then I just had to ride it back on out to like the classic finish because I can't do a proper game show voice when I'm doing the shutdown full cast welcome. It's not possible. By the way, that is our way of introducing you to the shutdown full cast. This is the internet's only college football podcast. You are listening to the dulcet and winded tones of Spencer Hall. Joining me as always, my co-host Holly Anderson. Say hello, Holly.
That was the dog, not me, making that noise.
Yes. And Jason Kirk joining us from windy Kennesaw, Georgia.
I'm in Epcot, Canada. That's where I am.
Windy Epcot, Canada.
I don't live in Kennesaw, Georgia. We're not doing that anymore.
You live in
Holy shit, he is in Epcot.
Yeah.
Are you?
Here's the proof. Here's the Ottawa. The Ottawa apple. Let's try this on here.
No, really. Jason is currently on a Zoom call live from the Canada Pavilion in Orlando, Florida.
I wanted to go down by the waterfall, but it's too loud. The wind is making up for it, though.
Are there any Epcot truckers there?
Yeah, I'm here as part of the Canada Freedom Convoy. We're just walking back and forth, like
down to ranch some rams.
Yeah, man, and the Ram Ranch boys, we're disrupting things. Took our pants off. That for some reason the rest of the Freedom Convoy didn't quite get the joke, but we kept our pants off.
You can hear another voice on this podcast, so we'll jump right to it. We do have a guest on the podcast today, and a very special one. If you watched Jeopardy last week, you may have seen a gentleman in mustache and a spanking vest underneath his suit coat. He is Lawrence Long, who had, I believe, a three-day run. Is that correct, Lawrence? 3 days?
It is.
On the Fine program?
3 days is correct, yes. It was a big time, but it was not a long time.
Lawrence advertised himself with the program's full endorsement of said title as stay-at-home uncle. And in case the full cast was not going to let us know about this, it turns out that we have more than a couple of connections to Lawrence anyway. So we thought, well, we have to get this man on the program if we can. Some magic transpired via our North Carolina mafia. They made it happen. And Lawrence Long, Jeopardy champion and full cast listener, that is correct?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, he admitted that in public. We have it on record. Lawrence Long, thank you for joining us. First of all, I'm going to ask a question everybody wants to know. Stay-at-home uncle, how on earth did you, one, get that past the dudes on the show who approve all of this? And two, please speak to the accuracy of said title.
Okay, the accuracy is strong. Like, it's mainly what I do. I pick up the niece. I drive her to basketball practices. I prepare food for. I mean, like, it is a labor of love, and it doesn't pay well, but the rewards are eternal. How did I get it past the dudes at Jeopardy? I knew as soon as they said, okay, we'll go with this. This conversation took place on October 24th of 2021. I called the producer there and I was like, I kind of feel like a nursing student and a stay-at-home uncle. And I explained to him a little bit why, and he said, oh, that's a great story. So it wasn't necessarily me entirely subverting the Jeopardy process as much as them giving me the space to tell that story a little bit. But yeah, so stay-at-home uncle is about the process of caretaking. And that's that means a lot of different things. But it also was the way in which we view identity is entirely based upon the way that we view it. And for me, it became a process of saying, what are you passionate about? Why are you in North Carolina? Why are you here? And making sure that my niece had enough space to thrive and grow up was what I was passionate about. And so you just go with that.
That's beautiful, man.
Now, you are from, what part of North Carolina are you from?
East Bend.
East
Bend. It is
Bend.
The East Bend of the Yadkin River.
Serber country.
Yeah.
That is, for those who are not quite as North Carolina literate, I believe this is part of the Piedmont Triad, if you want to be real specific. If that doesn't ring any bells, it would be between I-77 and just north of I-40, west of Durham, north of Charlotte.
You have to frame it in terms of football schools.
Just,
thank you.
Yes, just south
or
of
Greensboro.
And just west of, a little bit west to north of Greensboro and Winston-Salem, just south of Mount Airy, for those of you who are big fans of Andy Griffith. Is that where you're from? How'd you end up there?
I was born in Winston, we moved out here when I was about seventh grade or so.
Prior to being a stay-at-home uncle, I want to cover the work history before we get to Jeopardy, because it's a fairly interesting work history. You initially said sommelier. Were you for real a sommelier before you became a stay-at-home uncle? And is this the sassiest job resume ever?
This is a real upbringing of several tropes, because now we have the extension of wine aunt into wine uncle.
Yeah.
Right. Yes, I was a sommelier. So I went to Clemson for my undergraduate. And got a degree in English. And then I did something very peculiar, which was that I went to Naropa Institute and did a two-year physical theater program, which would have been my Friday anecdote if I had made it to the fifth game, was I studied the theater of Jacques Lecoq, which is like mask work, clown, puppetry, mime, Charlie Chaplin-esque, Buster Keaton sort of stuff, but a very intense, like, confined art school sort of space. Naropa is an entirely different basket of worms. Actually, I believe there, if you go back and check the records of the EDSBS Charity Bowl, you might see a contribution somewhere from the Naropa University Fighting Shambhalas, which is not at all their mascot. They don't play football, but I used to make them as a school on NCAA 2006. So
I remember this because as a drama kid, I was like, we have somebody there. And that
I
remember this very specifically.
Naropa is famous because Allen Ginsberg founded it, and it has the Jack Kerouac School of Disembodied Poetics. It was founded by a monk who died at the age of 46 of cirrhosis of the liver. It's a space. Boulder is a fantastic, weird space. So I did that. And then I came back to North Carolina and I started working in wine production in North Carolina, which is a thing. And then I moved to Chicago and at a restaurant on the north side in Evanston, actually, Northwestern. Actually, Northwestern graduation was our big day of the year. I was at a restaurant with 600 bottles of wine, ranging in price from $40 to $10,000 a bottle.
What? I have to work in one more football joke about Naropa, which is that at home we call it the Colorado School of Mimes. Which I'm kind of amazed they've never run with themselves.
What kind of offense was Naropa running, by the way? Were you a spread? Were you running pro style? Was it a triple option?
I was running spread. Actually, yeah, so this was around the time I was in Chicago during this time, and my friend and I were playing these dynasties. I actually remember that I applied to the University of Michigan head coaching position because they posted it online. And I had also run – the NCAA 2006 had a Heisman mode. And so naturally I went to New Mexico State and created a – I had just finished Ulysses. So I created a 6'6" quarterback named Buck Mulligan. And won the Heisman four times with him. And it was, we were running a version of the spread. And so that was on, I applied via email to the University of Michigan for their head coach, head football coaching position. I got an email in response that basically said, thank you for your interest. The position has been filmed. But how did that work out for you, Michigan? Mm-hmm. I'm just going to say.
You were a much cheaper spread offense candidate in the long
run. Exactly. Right. And do you know how hard it is to win the Heisman at New Mexico State? That is a place of I actually did work in New Mexico for a little bit. So
what were you doing? Okay, this is again part of the job history. Not many people get to New Mexico on purpose. That's usually an accident. There's a shockingly small number of people who live in New Mexico. Hal Mummy, the spread offense god himself and father of the air raid, used to say that when he recruited there, that there were more elk than people in New Mexico. How did you end up in New Mexico?
So the financial crash of 2008 happened. And at the time, I was actually trying to get a bartending gig in downtown Chicago because I'd moved to Chicago to pursue the arts, and I wasn't really being able to do that. So it was kind of bad timing on my part, but I went through six interviews for a downtown hotel daytime bartending gig that was scheduled, like said that they paid like $30 an hour. And I was like, if I can get in that pocket where I'm making $30 an hour, I'll be good to go and I can continue to do my arts stuff. And, you know, it's a livable space. I go through six interviews for a daytime bartending job. The last one, and everyone else, one through five, is like, we love your wine knowledge. We love your demeanor. We love all of this stuff. The last one is a Dutch guy who's like a big executive within this hotel chain that shall not be named. And he looks at me and he says, your sideburns are not luxury. And I don't know why you were passed on for this.
Bitch!
And I was like,
your sideburns are not luxury.
Right.
Luxury sideburns explained at any point? Like that sounds like Renaissance shit. Like, I'm picturing like enormous ancient mutton chops or something, or
no, these were probably down to about just below ear or so. I mean, I was still working in Evanston at the time, but when the financial crash hit, I was kind of like, okay, well, this is obviously like trending this way. So I was, here's my financial advice to you as a Jeopardy champion. Don't buy real estate in 2007. I had purchased a condo in Chicago, making a living, doing the sommelier thing. And then all of a sudden you're faced with having to pay mortgage payments in a bad market for people that are in the service industry. So I took a gig with the help of an uncle, by the way, in Deming, New Mexico.
Uncle Mafia.
I opened a food and beverage operations for a family entertainment center. Deming, New Mexico is about 100 miles west of El Paso, about 30 miles north of the border. There once was a Pancho Villa raid there. And so this facility had 16 bowling lanes, six movie theaters, glow-in-the-dark putt-putt, and what was the other one? Oh, yeah, it had an arcade.
How did you ever leave? This place sounds awesome.
Perfect place for uncles.
Well, my niece was born. My niece was born in, so that takes you in the time frame of 2009 to 2010. I was living in Las Cruces and driving to Deming every day. And my niece was born, and so my services were needed back east. So
you were living in Uncle Heaven, but then you became an uncle and had to leave it.
Right. Yeah.
That's how it works.
You descended from Uncle Heaven to Earth.
Right. Yeah. And then, you know, like it takes a while to mold an uncle into the space that you want. I had to learn. There's a learning curve for it. So you have to be adaptable and moldable.
I have a question. I read somewhere that your outfit the first night of Jeopardy, you mentioned being molded like into an uncle. You mentioned that your outfit the first night of Jeopardy was kind of like a tribute to like your uncle that did kind of help mold you. Who was he? What was his lasting impression? And damn, he had great fashion.
So my Uncle Dave, who passed away in 2014, really taught me a lot about it. So my Uncle Dave and my Uncle John both went to Georgia Tech in the 1960s. They grew up in Cocoa Beach, Florida. So actually, let me take you one step back, right? So before we get too much into the relations aspect, I am a byproduct of Tiger Gym, but the Tiger Gym was merged with one that I think Spencer would appreciate, which is that my grandmother was from New Zealand. And so you merge the Tiger Gym with the New Zealand aspects of it. And that
Kiwi
that gets
South
you...
Carolinian is some rowdy That's... energy.
Woo! Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Wow. Where aren't you from? You're from everywhere. You got more hometowns than The Rock.
Right. Yeah.
He's a pan uncle.
There's also a little bit. So my other grandparents were from Hamilton, Ontario, and Person County, North Carolina, which is, you know, over towards Burlington. But anyway, so my Uncle Dave was these two like brothers were going to Atlanta in the 1960s and going to Georgia Tech like you do. And Dave wound up becoming a civil engineer, but he did like, he had some sort of very peculiar PhD in like psychobiology from Florida State. Which I was like, what does that even mean? Like, so,
well, but apparently it had to do with like Buster by any chance.
Right.
Cause I feel like we're heading for another origin story.
Psychobiology is some Metal Gear shit.
Right.
Yes. Yeah, psychobiology is nanobots and psilocybin.
I looked at your arm.
From Florida State as well too. Like what are they doing? So, actually my uncle wound up doing like HVAC work for hospitals. Which involved, so there was a point in time where we were at the beach and my auntie Hot, who is one of like the direct Anderson descendants, she was the one that moved to Las Cruces. She was visiting the beach that week for our family reunion. And my Uncle Dave and my mom were there and they were having a conference late at night. My Uncle Dave, who had been working on HVAC units for the hospitals, had brought two industrial smoke bombs and to show them. My cousin John, who's in the photos, he's the one officiating the wedding, he's Dave's son, and he had set one off on the beach, and it just like there was smoke everywhere. Sure. They use these things to test the ventilation systems in hospitals. So we're all in this beach house together, and all of a sudden smoke starts pouring out of the ventilation systems. And everybody that's in the house knows exactly what's going on. So we're all cool. We're just like, hey, let's, you know, smoke's coming in. Let's just go outside. The neighbors don't necessarily know that. So you start getting fire. My mom and my Uncle Dave take off down the beach, not even knowing that it's my great aunt that actually suggested.
Wait, like at a run? Like your mom flees the scene?
Yeah, my mom leaves the scene. At this point in time, my dad had been engaged in a drinking game with my two cousins, and my two cousins had been cheating. And so my dad was left to discuss to the fire marshal while like absolutely shit-faced that it was just the kids, you know, and their smoke bombs setting things off. And, you know, that was why they had to call all of the Pawleys Island like emergency services. We actually made that, that incident made the state in Colombia.
God, that's thrilling.
Your uncle, so that, your uncle like, resume, that, that's like a deeply strong uncle resume already.
Okay, can, yeah, can I, I'm going to try to find this article now, all right?
Yeah, you find, you find the article using so it, the Canadian Disney internet.
It would have been about like 90, it would have been probably like right after Hugo. So yeah, early so 90s. Like,
cause, yeah, because they hadn't suffered enough down there.
Right.
This is like your uncle resume is already very, very strong. You have the diverse employment background, including seemingly unrelated professions next to each other on the resume. You also have the experience of having an ancestor named Tiger Jim and smoke bombs. What else goes into the uncle resume as far as rowdy behavior, eccentricities, and or other assorted lore that your niece is obviously going to have to pass down?
I think that you have to approach it from the standpoint of being a vessel for it, right? Like, you can't plan the rowdy behavior. You just have to, like, for me, it became a question of looking at my niece and wanting her to take on challenges with a gusto, with a fear that no matter if she failed, that the love and the support of the uncle would be there. And this is also coincides with my own capacity and own desires to undermine my sister, who I love very much. But like, that's the way an uncle has got to be. It's got to be supportive on one hand. You can't have one without the other. Just simple uncle chaos without the support, I mean, it's not the same flavor.
Makes you think.
Makes you think. Now you are currently preparing to you're taking prereqs for nursing school, right? Yeah. But while you're doing this, you apply for Jeopardy. One, are you a longtime fan?
Moderately. So my I'm more of a long term trivia player. Our mutual North Carolina friend and I like to go so I live near Wake Forest. And I don't know if you know about how much Wake Forest costs, but it's a little bit of money. So one of the favorite pastimes is to go into bar trivias and dust up some law students, dust up some medical students. The trivia, the Jeopardy aspect of it. Yes, I watched it when I was a kid, but I was not specifically like steeped in the lore of Jeopardy in the way that I probably should have been. Which is a preparation question, but I was a fan of Jeopardy, but I would say I was a casual fan.
So you take the online test. Mm-hmm. You are then. When was that?
Spencer's trying to figure out if September. I'm totally you're trying to figure out if Jeopardy's going to call you back.
Full disclosure: I am currently part of this process, allegedly.
Okay, I actually there were some tweets that I saw of yours, and I was prepared. I was prepared. I was like, if I walk in there and Spencer is standing there, like, I need to be prepared for that. So.
No, but he wasn't, because you bested him already.
You bested me already by not only being on the show, but winning. Like, I am now, I read Clay McNear's book, and we'll get to this, but I'm convinced that I would go in and just skunk. Because there are so many people who are obviously really smart who get on the show.
Also, there's a lot of paperwork involved to get there.
It's true. And so many smart people who get there and just absolutely get skunked. You apply, you take the online test in 2020, correct? Is it around March?
Yes. September.
Okay, so March, September 2020, you take the online test. When did they call you back about anything?
June. Was the first one, which I'm guessing that it came because you can do it online now. I guess that they were starting that process of applying for the next season coming up once they had gotten, because Jeopardy goes into the off season, I think in May. So I think that it was around that time that they started doing, that was around the time that I heard of a number of people starting to get calls.
And then when did you actually get to?
I love you doing this math. I'm sorry. It's funny.
Oh, no. I want to give an idea of people for how long this is going on. You're just like going about your life. When did they actually give you the call to be like, hey, come out to LA?
So the I took the second test in June. I did a follow-up and a gameplay. So I had auditioned once before in 2013. And during that time, I got called to New York and went in and took a second test in person and auditioned and like did a little bit of interview and gameplay portion there. This time, the difference is that I knew that I had passed the second test because they gave me a call for a second Zoom session where they did an interview and a gameplay. They never tell you specifically like what it takes to pass the test. There are rumors about what it is, but they never actually tell you whether or not you passed. And then that happened late July and early August. I actually went out to New Mexico to empty out a storage unit, which had been rented since I left in 2010, which I did. And then I got back and I got the call in the end of October.
And when you go out there, like do you go out there and is it like a cattle call? Are you waiting? Do they tell you exactly when you're going on? Or is it just kind of, hey, be here for a week. We might use you. We might not.
No, they tell you when you're flying in, they will give you an exact date. So I got a tape date and said, we guarantee that you will be on one show. That's not necessarily the case if you are in California and can get to the studio more easily. They use a number of alternates there. And so there was a woman that I played in my second game who had been an alternate the day before at taping, and they just called her back for that. So what they said is, we guarantee you one episode of Jeopardy. You have to win to keep going from there. But if you fly out, which they don't pay for until you actually win. If you fly out, you get one game. So I was looking at it and looking at the expenses of flights and everything else. And I was like, well, I absolutely have to get second place, because unlike Wheel of Fortune, if you get $10,000 and finish in third place in Wheel of Fortune, you get $10,000. If you get $50,000 in Jeopardy and you finish in third place, you get $1,000.
That's it.
Yeah. So I was like, I have to get second place. Nothing else like matters, because it's the difference between $1,000 and $2,000. So there was somebody online that said I was playing like I owed somebody my life. And I felt like that was a high compliment.
It's called Jeopardy. Right. Act like you're in danger. Come on now.
Right. Exactly.
Thank you.
What category were you hoping not to see? Because I always think about this. I'm like, well, what would I not want to see? Like, I don't want to see, if I get up there and it's like the Bible, I'm out. I'm done. I'm 0 for the whole column. I'm not getting a single thing right.
Yeah. I think the ones that I struggle with in that term, I knew I was pretty soft on pop culture, like songs after 2015. Like, I knew that I was weaker on that, because there's not as much where you can just go and look at like, okay, here was like Jeopardy likes the list stuff that you can learn, as opposed to learning like culturally where that is. And for me, like the 90s stuff is much easier because I grew up during that time period, whereas I'm not as tapped into, you know, Spotify or all of these things that creates a cultural context now. So
to any extent, is that because like music used to be very clear, it's based on albums sold, and now everything is like streaming has messed everything up? Like, I would imagine that makes it harder to predict what they might ask about, because like now there might be some musician who's very famous but has never sold a single CD.
Right. Yeah. And I for me, it was like, okay, what are you looking at specifically? Are you looking at the albums? Are you looking at, you know, charts or things like that? So it's and even then, like, you're not just going and looking at a list of things. Say if you looked at the top songs of 2018, you need more context for a lot of the pop culture stuff, because my thesis on it is that I used to call it vibes, that Jeopardy like asks you a vibes based question. And what I mean by that is like, they won't in the category of like history, they'll ask you something they'll ask you about an opera using the historical context of it. So they'll say like this opera, which was written. So they want you to take these two keywords, opera and the Egypt, and they want you to get to Aida, right? Like, so it's they're using context clues that if you don't know something immediately, you can actually like use this technique to take a tuning fork and ring one thing and then ring another thing, and then the synthesis of the answer is there. To do that at a fast rate is pretty amazing. Now, there's a myth, I think, about Matt Imodio that he was saying what's and then like doing this calculation in his head. Like, if he was doing that, that's insane. That's like the next level of what this is as a sport.
Go back over that for those who might not be familiar. Who was that and what was he doing live?
Okay, so Matt Imodio started in season 37 and then won 38 games over 1.5. I don't know the exact figure on it. I mean, I was studying a lot of his games leading up to it. And I think in one game, I remember looking at it and Matt Imodio rung in on 44 of the potential. He got 44 of the potential 61 clues right in the game, which is just like,
that's nuts.
You showed up on Jeopardy, you know, like that's,
they should have Call of Duty kill streak music for that. Like if you're doing
that, would be an amazing Twitch thing to do.
It really would be. Somebody
that's,
was like,
that's like Steph Curry green light.
Like, Pavlo inbound.
So what people are thinking is that he is buzzing and then using that extra second or two to continue formulating his answer. Like what do
because
they base
he said
that theory
he would,
on?
He would phrase every answer as what's, regardless of if it was a person or not. He'd say, like, if it was George Washington, he'd say, what's Washington? And people were getting mad at him for the, you know, because people get mad
so
at people.
Like, so like he had trained himself, it's almost like he had trained himself like to have two physical reflexes, to buzz in at a certain moment to, you know, and then to have that what's as a beat while his brain is just working in the background the entire time.
Trying to get part two of the question.
Yeah.
That's exactly, that's just smart to me. I'm sorry.
Get partials? Yeah.
Yeah.
I would
like
just...
He's like speed running. You know, this is a Super Mario conundrum.
What a cliff jump, though. What's... Hope the word arrives.
Yeah, right, every time. It's a cliff jump every time. Like, I can't not respect that. Like, I get why people are mad at it, but I can't not respect that.
I do like that he's basically taking my airport approach, but with Jeopardy. He's like, I will do everything I can to miss the flight and still make it.
Fuck it, Cooper Cup down there somewhere.
Yeah, Cooper Cup down there somewhere.
Cerber, what were you going to say?
I just wanted to come to Uncle Skip's defense for a moment. There was a moment, I can't remember which, I think it was your second, when they got you for something. They were like, "What?" And yeah, that's correct. And watch your phrasing. And I got so hot. I was like, that's bullshit. That's just East Bend, man. It was a form of a question. You just don't know. That's your problem. All right. I just wanted to come to your defense.
Right. I mean, if we were doing this in Spanish or French, like the question is implied just by the way that you raise your voice.
Exactly.
Thank you.
Yeah. No, I just, that was that moment I found myself passionately getting up out of this exact chair and being like, he said it right. You just weren't listening.
With the buzzer, I also wanted to ask you, the buzzer is, the buzzer's tricky, is it not? People do not seem to realize this, that the buzzer has its own sort of like delay. It doesn't, you can't ring in until the host is done saying the question and not a second before. Like it is an unusual thing that, like, I know from Claire's book reading that people have a lot of trouble with.
Yes. I read Claire's book as well. and when I got there, you know, she lays out the kind of differences of opinion about the ways to go about it, whether you go off the light or you go off the sound of the host's voice. And so I'm trying to process that while I'm there. And I found that when I tried to process that, I could never get in and that I had to completely zone out of it to actually be able to answer a question on it. You kind of have to just dissociate from thinking about the buzzer to actually, for me at least, to get in.
Do you get like practice with the buzzer and like adjusting to how long it takes? Shout out Claire, by the way, SB Nation alum Claire McNair.
That's true.
Yeah, the book is phenomenal.
But like, do you get to push the buzzer and see what happens like before you're actually live and everything?
So they do a practice game, and you play the practice game in segments. So you don't play it like you, everybody has to be have rung in on the buzzer at least once or twice for them to move on the practice. The segments there then, but what they do in that practice round is they leave the scores up. So you're taking on, it becomes like a podium relay race. And so I was in the middle podium with Kelsey, who played in my last game, and Dave, who is the current champion. And we were, you know, like for the rest of the day, we were looking at each other, just being like middle podium, because the middle podium won the practice game of Jeopardy. And I was actually super nervous when they called me first, because I was trying to hide a little bit from the glare of all the contestants. And they picked me first, and I'm like, I just didn't want to be picked first. And then Kelsey comes up to me, and she just like raises her fist as I'm getting my makeup done, and she says, "Middle podium." And I was like, "All right, cool." And then like as we're getting ready to play in what wound up being my final game, like Kelsey comes up to me, and we just have this kind of like quiet moment of respect. And then she kicked my ass on the thing. So you know, respect to Kelsey. And for all of that ass kicking, she got $2,000. So. I'm so glad that she beat me in that game, because at least by that point I'd won enough money. So the extra $1,000 is definitely useful to her, I hope.
So like when it comes to preparing for Jeopardy, my main question is like, is listening to the Shutdown Fullcast, is that like resistance training?
Yeah.
Like if your brain can remain smart while listening to this dumbass podcast, does that like add difficulty to your training?
My answer, as with all things, is muscle confusion, right, guys?
That's right.
How did it affect your body clock? Did it affect your body clock?
How does it help? By not helping at all.
It's about working harder.
Yeah, not smarter.
Right. And I think that like the capacity to process all of it, because if you I mean, I sent you guys those Sporkle playlists that I was doing. If that's all that you do, you're not going to do well, because that type of knowledge takes a long time to graft onto your brain. Like I did years ago, I did all the capitals, and it took me a long time to get 120 Supreme Court justices in my head. I did the flat. Like as you do that more and more, you start to pick up the ability to do that. So I was like super proud that I picked up 206 world flags in the span of like a week, and I was like, oh, that's awesome. I did not get a flag category, which I would have destroyed. But doing that type of preparation was just simply a part of it. And it's something that in terms of the way that schools are being taught now, they don't teach that recall. Like when I learned the presidents, I learned to do this rhyme thing with the presidents, but it doesn't give you any context for it.
I'm glad you brought that up though, because like I'm not a Jeopardy person, and I haven't read Claire's book, although she is a wonderful talent. It is my failing, not hers. But like gathering this information and retaining this information and synthesizing that information are three completely discrete skill sets. And like being good at just two of them isn't enough in a situation like this.
Well, I was, Spencer will be happy to hear this. I was having trouble with synthesis clues. I realized about 2 weeks out that I was not going to be a super champion. Like my scores were just not good enough. And you have to process that in a way. And my thought being like, if I had a year to prepare the way that I prepared for the last 6 weeks, I could have gotten to the point where I was unstoppable. But I knew that there were just so many gaps and so much stuff that I couldn't quite fill in. And you have to code that timing in over repetition. And so I knew that was coming. I mean, I also knew that I could like win a game here or there. But when I realized that, one, it was like incredibly freeing. So Spencer will be happy to know that 2 weeks out, I started doing the New York Times crossword. And that like, the crossword helps you like take those clues that are, the Ringling Brothers Karamazov, which is not actually a thing, but you're synthesizing something out of two disparate things. Mm-hmm. And it's
also a great way to make a whole bunch of topical Halloween costumes.
Right.
I always thought you had to have kind of a broken brain to be really good at Jeopardy. Like, there's lots of smart people on Jeopardy, and there's lots of smart people with broken brains, because any other person cycles a lot of this information out for organizational purposes and storage. Mm-hmm. Just a well-cleaned brain, just, you know, shuffling all of this stuff around. Whereas somebody who's good at Jeopardy is a hoarder. They've just hoarded all of this stuff in their brains, and they don't know where to put it. And in fact, sometimes it just like sticks together, right? And just that's basically what they count on happening, is that you'll have enough of these things stuck together that you'll answer, you know, 47 out of 61 questions or whatever.
Right. And surgeons don't always do the best on Jeopardy. And they're like, oh, well, you have this beautiful machine of a mind that does this thing. And it's clear of all. I mean, if I knew all the things that I knew, I would probably not want me operating on people. So, yeah.
This said by somebody who is going into a medical profession. That is what you are preparing to do.
But also, like, I've been on Jeopardy, so I can let it go, hopefully. Like, that's the next step.
But post-game, what did you do? Like, do you just kind of have to, like, book a flight home? You're like, well, I got to leave Burbank.
I knew that I was leaving the next day, because the next taping day, had I won, it was going to be, I think, December 13th. So they're like, and they will fly you back if you win. So they're like, they cleared that with me. But when I flew back, I was just, it was kind of a very, like, I didn't process it very much until I was flying back from Denver. Which was, you know, like, it was a very, very, I was exhausted.
Direct?
So I had to book my flight out there.
Okay. Sorry. I got that backwards. Okay. I was like, they made you do like a three hop. Okay.
It was just two.
Offensive.
Yeah. I went to Charlotte. So.
You're a hero.
Damn. Couldn't even get in PTI. Hate to see it.
Right.
Yeah. Couldn't even get you on the Jeopardy.
Wait, did you get to fly out of Burbank though?
No, I flew into LAX. I actually.
What the
so
fuck, man?
I knew that I had to be on the Sony lot on the 29th for a COVID screening. Mm. So they said you have to get here Sunday. So I flew on Thanksgiving Day, and I went, and I have some friends that live in Palm Springs. I went to Palm Springs for a few days. And I purposefully said, like, I'm not putting anything else in my brain until I play the game, because anything that I cram in now is going to just go out immediately. So I was in Palm Springs for a few days, and, you know.
Yes.
Went around. I've never been to Palm Springs, so.
This is the only good time of year to go to Palm Springs.
Right.
Because it's not 90.
Is there any benefit to like pruning brain cells in that process? Like you don't want to add any more stuff. Do you also like have a few adult beverages to sort of trim away cells that aren't pulling their weight?
It will help you, certainly. Yeah, I mean, if you can take the edge off of like the nerves that happen, yeah. I mean, any like marginal advantage that you get there. I mean, we used to go bowling at a place in Chicago where, you know, like you would get a Miller High Life and you put some Bob Seger on the jukebox, and like that improves your score. Like if you drink like a certain amount of Miller High Lifes, I mean, any amount of Bob Seger is obviously like enough
performance enhancer. Yeah.
Is this right, like that one beer that makes you really good at pool?
Yeah.
Yes,
I think
exactly.
So.
Yes.
Okay.
But like if you reach past the tipping point, it just becomes a mess.
Right, right. Everybody's reaction to magic beer is specific to their own fitness goals.
I will, without any further notation or support, remind everybody that one of the greatest celebrity Jeopardy players of all time was Cheech Marin. Just saying. Man was probably in the right frame of mind.
Yeah,
the speed, Claire though, the speed, that's the impressive part.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you go in too fast, you get locked out. So you have to be just right. Right. And whatever that balance is between calming your nerves and still maintaining enough motor control to do it, that's, you know, that's where Cheech Marin just laps us all.
Yeah, like the greatest celebrity players are people like, I think, Jerry Orbach. Jerry Orbach was a monster.
Well, of course he is.
On Celebrity Jeopardy, as was, I think, Andy
Michael
Richter
McKean
was really
well.
Good. Michael McKean is a beast. Cheech Marin was really good. There's a lady I'm forgetting who was really, really good too.
Thanks.
Yeah, I mean, there's
you're a real hero. Sorry, ally.
What? But yeah,
I'm sure there was a girl in there too.
There's a lady. That's because I'm
some broad.
That.
shout out to the ladies who are smart, by the way.
All the ladies.
Way to go, dames.
I'd like to thank all of you.
This is what he's really like.
All the time.
Was it Carol, Rosie O'Donnell, or Terry Garr, Paula Poundstone?
I assume it was Terry scrolling. Garr, but
Jane Kasmerick. Jane Kasmerick did.
Just name a lady.
No. It was Jane Kasmerick. She did.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
She did really well. As did Aisha Tyler.
Okay, babe.
Was it Yasmin?
Bates? Aisha Tyler's got some like advanced Bernhardt? Degree, doesn't she?
Yeah. She's a real.
No,
like,
I remember when I was doing interviews for Archer. She's like got some kind of. Is it biology?
Yeah, she's got some kind of crazy degree. She is a big old nerd, super smart. As we all look it up. What is Aisha Tyler's degree?
I was just about to compliment you and say, you're so much better than we are on Hand in the Dirt. Like, you guys vamp and figure out a way to make the time pass.
Nope,
we're just like, all right, let's Google this real quick. And then 10 seconds of silence.
Wait, you produce this show, and that tells me that you very smartly tune us out, because the number of times that we have read aloud as we type. Oh, I'm sorry. It wasn't biology. It was environmental policy.
Yeah. She went to Dartmouth. Shouts out for her to the one fun Ivy.
The drinking Ivy.
Yeah, the drinking Ivy.
While we look this up, I just report from Epcot Canada, a squirrel finished one of my beers. So that is pretty exciting.
A squirrel!
It was a cup was overturned with a little bit left in it, and a squirrel walked in, and walked back out happier. So shout
hell
out to
yes,
that squirrel.
Brother.
Alcoholic squirrels of Disney. This is going to be
know that it's alcoholic.
Freedom trucker squirrels of Disney.
That squirrel just likes to party. He doesn't have a problem.
It might just be Canadian.
Oh, that's where truck nuts
Canadian
from.
Party squirrel.
This is going to be the best episode of Rescue Rangers. I cannot wait to see it.
I have a question for you.
Hey, I'm Johnny Knoxville, and this is Canadian Party Squirrel.
Has the full cast ever covered the 2015 documentary Finders Keepers?
No.
No.
No, we have not.
No. And I know nothing about it. Holly seems to know what it's about.
I'm going to shut up because this is going to be a fun reveal for at least one of you.
Okay, so Finders Keepers takes place in Maiden, North Carolina. Maiden is just like it before Lake Norman was a thing, there was Maiden, which meant that you were way out in the country, probably about 40 minutes away from Charlotte on the northwest side. In the early parts of the 2010s, a nominally famous reality show sort of storage wars guy buys the contents of a storage unit, which include a smoker grill. He opens up the smoker grill and finds a human foot in it. A partially preserved human foot in it. I am spoiling the first 3 minutes of this movie for you.
No, this is
the
how
rest
it starts.
Of it,
yes.
This is how it starts, right. It turns out that this foot belonged to a guy who had lost it in a plane crash in which his father died. To honor his father, he then asked the hospital to give him the foot, thinking that he was going to get a series of bones that he could preserve and, you know, have as a tribute to his late father. He did not realize that he would be getting a piece of flesh with it. Within the first three minutes of this movie.
Like, he gets the foot like a dissected pig in biology class in high school?
Exactly.
Like, yeah,
kind of.
Nothing
to
like
him in a bag.
So he can continue dissecting it.
Being from Maiden, North Carolina, he has a friend who works at Hardee's. And
yeah. Yeah.
He takes the foot to the friend who works at Hardee's and drops the foot off in their walk-in freezer, because obviously you need some sort of cold storage
for
a human foot. He turns out of the Hardee's parking lot, and his phone rings immediately. And it is the manager of said Hardee's, who is not very happy about the presence of a foot.
First of all, terrible OPSEC, because this happens like right away.
Yeah.
Right.
Like they are caught. I will say this with respect. They are caught immediately.
Right.
Couldn't be me. I'm built different.
Yeah.
And right. And not so like he, we would be. Of course, because he was already, his car was already started. Why would you park your car and go into the store? No, he goes through the drive-through and has his foot passed back to him through the drive-through at a Hardee's. And that is all within the first 5 minutes of the movie. It's incredible. I don't know if there is a criterion for the full cast, but it is.
It's very
the
special.
Most, like, full. And Maiden, North Carolina is a place that, you know, is. Whew, it's a place.
Is that where they shot Dawson's Creek? I just ask that whenever anyone's
no,
like, they shot that.
Sorry. Yeah, that was in Wilmington.
Okay. Sorry. It's in Wilmington.
The first of the great teen soap shoots.
Everyone from North Carolina, when they say where they're from, because North Carolina has 1,000 different small towns, all of completely indiscriminate geographical like positioning. Like, there's no rhyme or reason.
North Carolina
it could be anywhere.
Is like Vancouver, America.
Right. So when anyone's like, oh, I'm from...
The way that I describe it is that Horny Town is on the way to Climax, which is just past Welcome.
Fair enough.
Not far from Meat Camp, right. My favorite name in all of North Carolina. I just always ask, is that where they
That's
shot Dawson's Creek?
That's,
yeah. Like, I'm from Meat Camp. Is that where they shot Dawson's Creek? Did you meet Vanderbeek? Oh, my God.
Right, which our state government decided to cut off those funds. They cut off the tax credits, and it all went down to Georgia.
Yeah, way to go, dickheads.
Woo!
I do like the idea of the Avengers in an alternate reality where they don't do that being shot in, like, Carrie. Right? like Greensboro, home of the Avengers.
Looking out over the surf beach bars of upstate New York.
Holy shit, the Avengers looks a lot like Eastbound and Down.
Do y'all, I can't remember if we've talked about this before. Do y'all know why, I mean, I guess the Carolinians know, but do the rest of y'all know why all of, like, that Danny McBride, Jody Hill Hive shows are set in the Carolinas?
Why?
He's from he went to School of the Arts.
Yeah, here in Winston.
He's from there. That whole Hive went to NCSA, but... After I forget if it was after Eastbound and Down or like during Vice Principals, but at one point that whole cadre like pulls up six because they're living in Los Angeles at the time. That whole cadre that went to NTSA and then went to NCSA and then went off to make movies picks up like with their entire families and they all move back to South Carolina. Like they all live there now, and. All of those movies, like, this is why, this is just one reason that I'll talk about this for 15 minutes, why The Righteous Gemstones is so good, because it's all getting made, like, locally, and all of the talent is coming, like, this is why you have accents that you don't have to, you know, crawl under the bed in embarrassment from on Righteous Gemstones, but they all moved, like, with their families to South Carolina, and were like, yeah, California sucks, we live here now.
I literally said that last night when we were watching the new Righteous Gemstones. Edie Patterson was saying something. I just looked over to Chelsea and I was like, this is the only fucking show that gets it. This is the only one that's not like Logan Lucky or whatever.
Because they went there.
Meanwhile,
and
our house.
In it.
Yeah, Ozark is playing at our house. I have to leave the fucking living room every time. There's one character on it.
They have not gotten better. It has not gotten
hurts.
Better. I don't watch either. My parents watch it, so I just have to hear it.
Whereas,
but like they've been making that show for a long time, and no one has gotten better at voices.
Whereas you've got Adam Devine, who's from Iowa, but I'm convinced atmospherically has picked up a perfect Carolina accent because
yes,
he said,
"I can grasp a cub."
When he says, he says, "Nuh-uh."
Yes,
yes there it is.
Nuh-uh. Yes. It's pitch perfect.
It's beautiful.
He's the one character on the
also,
show where I'm like, oh, I knew
that
guy.
Adam Devine
I knew
was
that
in
guy.
Pitch Perfect, and I love that for you.
Oh. The entire thing is completely authentic, and that's before you let Danny McBride loose. Like, Danny McBride actually might have the most subtle accent. He's the guy from there, but they're all completely pitch perfect and correct. That is right down to, by the way, Eric Roberts, who from Memphis.
Hall Pass Roberts, as he's known in my home.
Eric Roberts, canonical film uncle now after this role in Righteous Gemstones.
As the uncle for which the Uncle Buster sweatpants are named.
That man.
My land.
That man showed up and he looks like he walked right out of Shelby County. It's beautiful.
So there's a amongst the Jeopardy online community, there's a tendency on one particular board, and I'm not going to call anybody out, but a game that I lost, that this particular person said that they got 58 questions right. Like, you can just post whatever you want to up there. They're like, yeah. Oh, I got 58
that
questions
like
right. And I missed Eric Roberts and I missed Kids in the Hall. And my response to which is, if those are the only two questions that you missed, you missed the most important ones. Because
what's wrong with your life?
Like, I don't know you, but right. I hate you.
Right. So, I mean, like, it's a phenomenal experience to be on Jeopardy. But I mean, if I could get 58 questions right,
Yeah. No, I mean, if you could, would I trade that for having never seen Best of the Best? Never. Never. I will die and fly straight to hell on the wings of a giant bat before I give up seeing Best of the Best, the finest Taekwondo movie ever made with Eric Roberts and James Earl Jones. There's a scene in that movie, by the way, still one of my favorites. They're like, you got to face the North Korean Taekwondo team. And they flash to like the North Korean Taekwondo team's like regimen. And they're all under freezing waterfalls, shirtless, going like, ah! And as a kid, I was like, that's what being an adult is like.
Were you wrong?
Isn't this the one where there's a key, like there's like an advice point that's like, if all else fails, punch him in the nuts?
Basically, yeah. Yeah, there's another like extreme. There's a very loud American Texan type character who wears a cowboy hat to let you know he's from Texas. And he says things on the side encouraging. I'm like, Tommy, drum him like a toilet seat. I'm like, who beats up toilet seats?
That Texas chili, brother.
Me crushing it every day.
When that Texas brisket is moving through you, that's how it works, brother. Just grip, hold on tight.
Two big ribs and a gallon of chili.
There it goes.
The eyes of Texas are not upon me, because if they were, they'd be horrified.
Don't look, please don't look. Shameful things are happening in this.
I am gigging it.
It's gigging me, brother.
These Raiders have read me the Riot Act. This is like Texas Tech. I have no defense for this. Wow, where are we now?
Where are any of us really?
Lawrence, I have no further questions for you. Do you have any further questions for us as a full cast listener who
or
is
answers?
Making... Yeah, or answers.
Ooh, answers in the form of questions.
Yeah.
As
the official stay-at-home uncle of both Jeopardy and this podcast.
I have two points of quick order. One is obviously being on the full cast is such an honor and a privilege. I miss not being able to see Ryan. And if I saw Ryan, I would tell him that my favorite part of the full cast is when he actually makes up musicals, and that this is a game show format. Perhaps Spencer grew as too, like Spencer got too smart for the musical content, but that I could listen to Ryan make up musicals all day. Right. So please tell him that. Please tell him congratulations. I want to pitch you guys on something that happened last week, which was the Grand Theft Auto. Right. So I have a scenario in which Grand Theft Auto can be made. And now for this, we have to get absolutely positive. We have to get executive credit for Treb Law, because our Grand Theft Auto opens in the smoldering remains of a burned down coffee shop bathroom in Shamokin, Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
And you can choose
greenlit. Let's
between
go.
Three different characters. You can choose to be Alba, who, you know, likes the donuts at Dunkin' Donuts. You can choose to be Dutch, who drinks Powerade and talks to his attorneys. Or you can choose to be Edna, who absolutely... Now, Pennsylvania, as a Grand Theft Auto universe, you've got Pittsburgh, you've got Philadelphia, you have Central Pennsylvania with all of its corrupt judges. Ed Rendell could be a character. Freddie Mitchell could be a character in this. You could have art heists at the Barnes collection. Andy Warhol could be adjacent to it.
Can we kill Hitchbot? Like, can killing Hitchbot be a mission?
Absolutely. You have
final boss dumpster. Hitchbot.
You could die and drown in a dumpster pool. You know, like the non-playable characters. You know, the words that would come out of the NPC mouth would be just an incredible cross section of that. So that, I mean, I fully give. I mean, I'm willing to share credit for that, for just synthesizing it, but it's Treblaw and you guys have written that. It's just out there.
You have unlocked Scrapple.
You could even have pregame training, like where this has to unlock by voice, but you have to say Grand Theft Auto in the correct Pennsylvanian accent.
Grand Theft Auto.
Before, like a breathalyzer test before it'll even let you drive.
Grand Theft Auto.
That's how you know you're ready to exit training mode.
The three city maps that flow together so well, Pittsburgh, Central, and Philly, like, it's so distinct. Even if you're not from Pennsylvania, you could immediately look at any block of any of them and know where you are. This is genius. This is perfect. I'm going to be disappointed whatever they announce if it's not Pennsylvania.
Loosely based missions on the movie Striking Distance as well.
What was the boat cops movie with Michael Keaton set in Pittsburgh?
No, that is Striking Distance. It's Bruce Willis.
Is that Striking Distance?
That is Striking Distance. Yeah. You are a river boat cop with Dennis Farina and Sarah Jessica Parker.
Yes. Yes.
Striking Distance, boat cops. Pittsburgh, they would have some sort of spoof of Bane taking over the football stadium. We got that going on. You call him like Pain or something like that. Lame taking over the football stadium.
Santa Claus.
This is perfect.
Yeah, you can beat up Santa Claus.
You gotta defeat Santa Claus. You gotta
Santa will return,
Santa
and they're like,
Claus.
We can't have that. Santa can't come back to Philly. We'll show him again. You've unlocked batteries. Throw batteries.
You have to earn money at the donut shop in Shamokin. You've got to go back and collect. It all starts because you go back.
You gotta fight your way out of the football jail in Philly.
The amount of like ATV materials you could have, you know, in Western. I mean, the vehicle mods are just incredible.
I think you should have to fight your way out of every building you enter in Philly, right? Like, you can't enter a building without three people trapping you in at the door and be like, bring it.
It's the only way to be sure.
Yeah. I love this idea. Grand Theft Auto, the PA story. This is a beautiful idea, Lawrence. And now that you've said it on this podcast, I believe you're entitled to a 20% royalty since this is going to be split between five of us.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's so good.
Oh my God. My skin is crawling. Woo.
That's an idea that's going to hold water.
I'm hearing more Baltimore. I think
yeah, there's a little the Bucks
you know,
Bucks
you know
County.
Because you watched the Super Bowl and Al Michaels is not out of your system. Yeah.
We got to get Kirshner and Treblaw on as executive producers here.
How do you sell that in a brown wrapper for the ears?
Treblaw's going to make sure that the design contains entirely too many surgical dummies and instructional dummies, right? Just sort of floating with their mouths agape and their unceasing eyes, like looking, in the middle of like burning coal slag heaps. Oh, this is perfect.
You had me at burning coal slag heaps.
I know.
Heaps.
You had me at burning slag heap. Oh, that's right. That's right. Betty's reminding us that we have neglected to do one thing, which is we've neglected to plan for the future, right? Hmm. We've been so present in the moment. For instance, Lawrence, you've just won a substantial sum of money, and perhaps you're wondering where you're going to put it. Jason, do you have any suggestions for him?
Well, if I were you, or Canada Party Squirrel is back. Here's a look at Canada Party Squirrel. If I were that squirrel and I were looking to invest my nuts or my acorns, I would go to acorns.com/fullcast to deposit those into the internet. And then I would set the buttons to do the things that create more money, which involve investment. And those can be done at acorns.com/fullcast. And when you do enough of those things, you get to stop working at your job. And how it works is via economics.
Economics,
also
which by the way,
homefieldapparel.com.
Tell me more.
Well, it's got shirts.
shirts. NC State, by the way, for home field apparel this week. NC State dropping a fire-ass collection of shirts. Like, most of the time when we talk about NC State, there's a gentle tone of mocking, as in the most 8-4 program at its peak in college football history. And yet, all respect due to them this week, because the NC State collection at homefieldapparel.com, absolute fire, top to bottom. The only ones that mention the custom dairy products of said institution, which I am instantly all in on. Just a fantastic series of choices for both the Wolfpack fan and a person who just likes wearing a big slobbery wolf on a shirt. If you're a person who just loves big slobbering wolves and wants to wear them on a shirt, go ahead. Get you to homefieldapparel.com.
Big wet wolf.
Get you some of the big wet wolf. Big horny wet wolf. Yeah,
I'm actually
Betty
wearing
feels
a Montana State one right now.
Yeah.
Yes.
Looks superb on you, Lawrence, if I may say so myself.
The cat.
I love that. I love that angry kitty. He looks electroshocked. Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah, I mean that's how you feel. That's how you feel when you wake up every morning in Montana, electroshocked mostly by the cold. Homefieldapparel.com. What is the promo code there?
Fullcast.
Why, that'd be Fullcast. It'd get you 20% off your first order. I think that's all you need to know.
Cerber, I really love the script Carolina on your shirt right now.
Yeah,
that is hot, man.
I just want to say, I'm a Clemson fan. I've been a Clemson fan since I was 5 years old, even though my grandmother tried to pull me the other way.
We like you. We like you.
Yeah. But I wear this because these shirts are so fucking comfortable, man. They're really awesome. And Clemson, you should really get on board. I don't know what the fuck you're waiting for, because right now you're currently getting cucked by the cocks, because I'm wearing their shirts because they're better than anything I can get with your logo on it.
Cocks cucked.
Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo.
Did you hear that, Clemson? You hear that, Dabo? Yeah. You hear that? The challenge. The gauntlet has been thrown.
Dabo doesn't know what that word. Dabo don't know what that word means, but
the red solo cup has been thrown at your feet.
Fuck you and your woo-hoo-hoos in the goddamn fight song.
That is right. Hail to thee, comfy t-shirt. That's what you say. To Dabo to get him super fired up. I wanted to say one thing with acorns.com, currently saving my money so that I can buy a piece of the moon, because I love nothing more than articles that say economists say, because it just means like one person said it and then somebody else was like, that's possible, and then the person writing the headline can go, economists say that we should privatize the moon in order to relieve poverty on Earth.
I'll do it.
Yeah? I'm in.
Dibs. We're going to be privateers on the moon.
We're going to find those snakes. They're real, and they're up there, and we were right all along.
We're going to find them for Ryan.
Yeah.
Bring him back, shower him in snakes as a baby present. Welcome home.
Ooh, I had another thing that I meant to mention to you guys. I had a conversation with Server yesterday about this. So for the EDSBS charity pool, Spencer has taken a lot of Michigan tattoos, and we all know how it's going to end. And my uncle was a Georgia Tech graduate. I have two uncles that are Georgia Tech graduates. I have an aunt that's a Michigan graduate. So what I would offer to you as a, you know, whatever kind of offering it is for the third place team in the charity bowl. I have no tattoos on my body, but that team can put something on my body. I just felt
you realize this
it.
Might so, be Texas A&M.
It might be.
It might be
the Aggies.
Texas A&M. Right. Yeah. I'm okay with that.
I love it here. We're building something great here. It's fantastic. I love it here. I don't know how many times I got to tell you I love it here.
That's and when people say, line.
But it might be Georgia. Go Dogs.
Yeah. No. It might be Georgia. They might finish third, which they're more used to than what happened this year. But if you get the Aggies one, just remember, it pisses me off that people suggest you wouldn't want to get an Aggies tattoo. It's a great education. It's a great university. Everyone here, I get pissed off when people say that. I'm sorry. Excuse my language.